What is the name of the athletic wear made out of synthetic bees' wings that Chris uses? Answer at the end of the episode.
I would like to go on record, speaking as a citizen of Pawnee.
I'm Kurt Hapley, and I just realized I'm not holding my microphone.
And I will call my new Italian fast casual eatery the Locale Calzone Zone.
You can trust me, because I don't care enough about you to lie.
Everything I do is the attitude of an award winner, because I've won an award.
I made my money the old-fashioned way. I got run over by Alexis!
Hello and welcome to Citizens of Pawnee, a Parks and Recreation podcast, where I discuss anything and everything from character breakdowns to episode rewatches, as well as some other trivia and tidbits about the show. My name is Brian, and I'll be your host. This is episode number 118, being recorded Sunday, May 5th, 2024. And today I'm going to be talking about Season 4, Episode 16, Sweet 16. And just a reminder that this podcast will have full spoilers for the entire series. It is Orthodox Easter. It is Cinco de Mayo. Folks, well, I mean, when you listen to this, it'll be 2 days later. But as I'm recording, it is Easter de Mayo. So we're going to party, so happy, Cristo Anesti, I hope I'm saying that correctly, to my Orthodox listeners. I know there are some of you out there, mostly family and friends, but to anyone who celebrates, happy Easter. This is a fun day. We go over by my in-laws. We'll be doing that later today. It's early on. It's a Sunday morning right now. So later on in the day, we're going to be going over by my in-laws, and they go all out for Easter. It's awesome. We with the lamb and the baklava and the pastizo and cheesecake. my sister-in-law Jamie makes a killer cheesecake. But anyway, we do all the fun stuff. We do the dyed eggs, the red ones, and we do I've been a part of this family, my wife's family, for almost 15 years, longer than that, actually. I mean, we've been married for 15 years, over 15, going on 16, but anyway, I don't know, is there a name to the game, the egg cracking game, where you, you crack butts and you crack noses. So anyone who's not familiar, yeah, it's just a game you play with. Obviously, the eggs have to be hard boiled. If they're not, it's going to be a very messy game. But yeah, everyone just gets an egg and you go nose to nose. You just kind of crack them quickly. One of them will crack and the other will not. So whoever wins, I mean, you have two sides. You have the nose and the butt. So you have two chances to like stay in the game, or you know, as long as yours doesn't break. But anyway, whoever has, because someone's got to lose. Like there's, you know, whoever has at least one or maybe even both sides still intact is the winner. I have never won. I think probably every year I have done an Easter episode or an episode around Easter, I always talk about either Tom Haverford from season one when Leslie's having the Easter egg hunt and he forgot to hide the eggs. Or I talk about the fact that I'm going to make or somehow have like a rigged egg that will be indestructible. So just like a dummy egg that I will bring with me 1 year and I will win and it'll be awesome. But I thought maybe I would tell you guys a fun story about why I was baptized Greek Orthodox. So my wife is a quarter Greek, I believe. You know, obviously my mother-in-law is half Greek and her mom was, I don't know. But before we got married, you know, my wife, Joni, my lovely wife, it was very important to her that we got married at a Greek church, because growing up, like when I was younger, it was very like my parents, they got us, we would go to church every week and it was very important to them to kind of instill the religion into us and the beliefs and everything. And it just like we would go every week, but like, you know, like most kids, and, you know, we didn't really like going. some of the churches we went to, there was a few actually, but then like, I think at one point when we moved, we moved further away from this one that we kind of grew up with. So then it was kind of like, we would go to a few from then, but some of them had like donuts and coffee and shit. That was awesome. So it's like, yeah, we'll stay at this one for a little bit. At least my parents, it was like, that's the way they could get us to go willingly. But as we grew up, it wasn't, you know, I mean, our parents were just kind of like, well, you know, it's kind of up to you guys now. I mean, like, we're not going to make you go to church. And truth be told, I know for my parents, it was just getting harder because we were in sports. We had things like that. And, you know, like, just it's tough to do. I mean, like, when you're always doing things and then like to give up your Sunday morning, you know, I know it's only a few hours, but anyway, religion in my family just was never a huge deal, especially growing up. My parents just kind of, it was like, you know what, you know, you guys can kind of make your own decisions. And I didn't know that I was never baptized. For some reason, I thought I was like baptized as a young child, because clearly in my memories, I never recall being baptized. So it was like, oh, they had to have done it when I was a baby. Nope. I was dedicated to the church. I didn't know that this was a thing. And when we found out it was, and I don't mean to be insensitive here, but it was like, a feeling like, oh my God, like I found out like I was adopted or something. I mean, like I just had that like gut punch, like, oh my God, like I was never baptized. And it wasn't that big a deal to me. Just the whole, like, you've never been baptized. What scared me is that it's like, oh shit, Joni's church probably won't marry us and actually that's when Joni called me. I was working. She's the one that told me, hey, numbnuts, you've never been baptized. And again, I had no idea. So it's just like, what the fuck? How did you find this out? And she's like, well, I was asking your mom for your baptism papers, and she said you didn't have any. So her, again, like, yeah, her church and then most churches, they won't just marry you, like, if you're not, like, a member of the church. So her, we hadn't gone to church, the Orthodox church that she attended as a kid. Like, we hadn't gone in years. However, you know, they were like, well, I mean, if Brian takes some classes like to learn about the religion, then yeah, we'll baptize him, and then we can, you know, he can get married, or you guys can get married here. So I was just like, yeah, let's do what we got to do. I to me, it wasn't really that big a deal. And I don't mean to sound like insensitive to the religion or to my, you know, my wife's family and the but being baptized Greek, it was for her. I mean, it was just like, yeah, like whatever we got to do, because I don't know how else this is going to work. And of course, it was an honor. I mean, it was cool to be able to learn more about the religion and then just be shown some of the stuff throughout the church, you know, like the robes they wear and everything for the ceremonies. It was really cool. But anyway, so yeah, that's how I am technically Greek Orthodox, or at least I was baptized Greek Orthodox. So yeah, I thought it was pretty cool. And actually my Greek name is Basil, by the way, or Basil, whatever. So if you want to call me that, Brother Basil. What else did I want to talk about? Oh, cicadas. Yeah. No, I said I wouldn't report on them until I saw some. Well, folks, they're coming. They're still not definitely, I still haven't seen any surface level, but no joke, I was transplanting, what are they, lilies, I think? The ones that come up in the spring and they look great for like a week and then they die and they look terrible for the rest of the year because they're just like saggy and moldy and gross. But anyway, I was transplanting some to a different spot, and in the one like shovel it took to dig up, I saw like, and they looked like grubs actually, like small, like, but they were cicadas, and they were just they're getting here, they're ready. Like I said, in the one shovel full I pulled up, I saw probably like 15 just, and they were like, I thought they were dead at first, because say again, if you don't know about cicadas, they come up and they're a lot smaller when they come out of the ground, and that's when they'll like get on a tree or whatever, and they break out of their shell and they like literally like triple in size. Like, it's not triple, but they like at least double in size, and they take on a whole new look. Like, it is pretty cool when you just you see a cicada shell, because they stick to trees. Like, they've got nice pinchers, and once they're in there, it's just like, I'd love to actually, I could probably just go on YouTube and watch a video about this. And again, anyone who has made it this far, if you're new to the episode, you can check the show notes and just skip to like Parks and Rec if you want to hear about that. But anyway, it's been a couple weeks since I've talked about cicadas. I think cicadas are highly interesting, apparently. Shug, dear friend of the show, dear friend of mine in IRL, that's how the kids say it. He made me laugh a few days earlier with we were texting back and forth, and he actually dropped in an incredible Parks and Rec reference. Not one that like I've probably talked about it recently, actually. Maybe not. But we were texting back and forth, like I said, and we were talking about another podcast. Actually, a podcast I highly recommend if you're a big movie fan. If you're a big movie fan and you're a big sports fan, the Rewatchables podcast with Bill Simmons. But anyway, that's the guy we were talking about, Bill Simmons, because I know Shug is a huge sports guy as well. So I was like, hey, you know who this is, right? And we started talking about, and he's like, yeah, he used to work for ESPN. So we were talking about that podcast a little bit. And I was like, well, you know, I was trying to give him some information. But and I said this in the text, because I know Shug does listen to this podcast. Thank you. And I wrote to him, no joke, just like I do on Citizens of Pawnee in real life, I don't Google things, because that's what I've talked about. Like, instead of me Googling if bitch was actually what a female dog is called, later on in the week, a couple of you reached out and told me, yeah, you lazy ass, that's what it is. So again, thank you. And like, speaking of cicadas, instead of me just Googling, hey, are cicadas native to Germany? I just waited until Teresa reached out and was like, no, what the fuck are cicadas? But what am I talking about? Okay, so Shug, I always do this. I should have written this down so I wouldn't have gone so off course. What are we talking about? Okay, so yeah, we're texting back and forth about Bill Simmons. And I made the joke about how it's like, well, I don't know if this is true or not. I'm not going to Google it, yada, yada, yada. And he goes, you should check Alta Vista. Yeah, that was an amazing reference, because he is one of the OGs who got me into Parks and Rec. He was, I've mentioned him before. He was one of the ones that told me about John Ralphio before I got there. And then when he told me that he had a sister named Mona Lisa, it was just like, that is the funniest fucking thing, just because the names were so amazing. And he, one of the things that I caught early on and I mentioned to him, and it was always kind of like a funny inside joke because it was just like a very minor Easter egg, was we would always talk about the Alta Vista thing, like how funny that was, because a lot of people don't even remember Alta Vista. Like, that was real. That was an actual search engine before, like, or maybe at the same time as like Yahoo and like Ask Jeeves and shit, I'm not sure, but obviously it didn't last, or maybe it still does. I should Google. I guess I can't do that because I don't Google anything, but just go on and at least type in altavista.com and see what happens. But Shug, excellent reference, man. That really made me laugh. All right, so I guess we'll just jump into some filler.
Everything he's saying is nonsense, and he's fooling them.
All right, so I was going to do filler anyway. There was actually a couple of things I wanted to talk about. There, like Rebel Moon Part 2, The Scar Giver. Holy shit, that movie was terrible. It's on Netflix. I did talk about the first one a couple months back when that came on, and that was awful. This one, I don't know, it might have been a little better because it was like a little easier to follow, but just because there weren't as many like them jumping planet to planet just to like assemble the team. There is a really, really stupidly funny scene where, because like one of the big gripes about the first one is that everyone's like, you don't care about any of these characters because we don't know shit about them. So in this movie, all of the characters that we don't know anything about, they sit down at a table and literally one after another, it's like, now you tell your story. Oh, okay, man, so you have a revenge story. You're after this guy. Okay, now you tell your story. And then it's like, Oh, that's weird, man. You oddly have the same exact story as the other guy. But let's move on. Now you tell your story, and the next person goes, and it's like, what are the odds that everyone at this table has the same exact upbringing or same revenge story? It's just like, yes, he came to your planet and killed her. We don't care. Like, in the first one, it was fun to talk about how it's like, this movie sucks because we don't know anything about the characters, among many other things. And then you find out about the characters, and it's like, yeah, I remember I didn't give a shit then, and I still don't give a shit. But anyway, Rebel Moon, The Scar Giver. I do recommend watching these movies, and I hate to say that because I think Zack Snyder is just like a very arrogant director, and he's just like, he, for whatever reason, gets to do whatever he wants. I don't know why, with all these stupid, like, Snyder cut things. But I hate to say it, it's like, oh, I recommend it. Like, if you have Netflix, just watch these movies. I mean, like, they're so stupid. Like, they look really good with the CGI, but I mean, like, they're awful. I didn't mean to talk about that movie this long. And then I was also going to possibly talk about the Planet of the Apes trilogy, which I just rewatched. That's Rise, Dawn, and War. All for the Planet of the Apes. This is the one that, like, the first one had James Franco, and then the last one had Woody Harrelson. But excellent movies. Very sad, though. Like, Sasha, if you're listening, it was, listening to Flips and Bumps either last week or the week before when you and Pee-wee were talking about Planet of the Apes, and you had said, I want to watch those because I know you never saw them. I had seen them all, but like with the new one coming out, it was like, oh yeah, like I want to watch those. So I did watch them over the weekend, and they're fantastic movies. But again, they're sad. I mean, like there's triumph in the movies, but there's also a lot of just like, man, like some stuff is kind of like hard to watch. Like, you know, like if you're a big animal lover, that's all I'll say. All right. So what I wanted to talk about though, how I started off, I wouldn't have talked about this because I don't like talking about politics, and I'm not necessarily going to, but I'm going to kind of talk about a movie that really could be controversial on a political stance, and that's Civil War, which came out a couple weeks ago, I believe it was, to theaters, directed by Alex Garland, written and directed by Alex Garland. And one of the reasons, like, I did enjoy this movie, so I'm gonna, that's one of the reasons I wanted to talk about it. But the other reason is that Nick Offerman plays the president in this, so it's topical for Parks and Rec, and also it's just another Parks and Rec character playing the president, because either Leslie or Ben, one of them becomes president at the end of the series, so I just thought that was cool. All right, so the thing about this movie, and I remember when I saw previews for it, trailers for it originally, I was just like, this is because essentially what it is just America has gone to war with itself. And it's like, wow, what a, like, it's kind of a fucked up thing, like, to put out a movie like this when there is an election year in America. And it's like, all right, so early reviews, like, I thought this movie looked really cool. I wanted to check it out. They weren't really telling you much in the trailers about why this was happening. It's just like, okay, that, but America's at war. And so that was very intriguing. And then, like, early reviews I was seeing, there was a lot of like, oh my God, this movie's fucking awesome. This movie's crazy. The action is intense. And then, but then I was starting to see more people, like every third or fourth comment would be someone who just saw the movie, like, it's fine, it's not what people are saying, da, da, da. But then every comment from that would just be like, no one fucking cares about your opinion. So it was very obviously a lot of like bots and stuff that were for this movie, and then anyone that would get in with a negative comment would just get destroyed. But then it's like, the more and more I was watching, not negative comments, but people more so just being like, hey, be prepared. Like, this movie isn't what it's being sold as. And I agree 100% because in the trailers, they show you a lot of action. Now, most of the action, this, I'm not going to spoil anything, but I will spoil this. And it's not like a plot spoiler, but a lot of the action you see in the trailers, that's a lot of the action in the movie. Like, there's not, I mean, yeah, I would say geez, maybe 15 to 20% of the movie's action. The rest is just like a lot of drama, a lot of white knuckle, tense situations, great acting, incredible acting. Kirsten Dunst, she plays the lead actor or the lead character who's a journalist, and her team. And that's the thing about this movie is that in the trailers, they show you these journalists, but they don't tell you that the entire movie is, it's almost like they're just being followed by, it's almost like a documentary, almost not shot like a documentary where they're talking to the camera, but it might as well be, because that's what this movie is. It is their journey to get from wherever they are in the United States. Like when the movie starts off, they're trying to get to Washington, D.C. because the, you know, like I said, the country's at war. Half the country is trying to get to Washington, D.C. to like take over. And so back to like the kind of the plot that they're leaving out is, why did this start? Now, you know, like as an American, like that's what was kind of intriguing to me. It's just like, yes, because I know, and again, I'm going to try not to be political. I'm not going to, nothing on stances or sides or anything like that. But things like this do kind of scare you, because it's like, yeah, we could get there. We could get there. But like, as I was at, when I was talking to Joni about it, it's like, this country's kind of always been at war. I mean, like this is a movie that's like kind of like showing it again, but it's like, this is nothing new. And that's just what's kind of sad about it. But anyway, Nick Offerman's character, again, he plays the president. You find out that he has self-appointed himself a third term, which in the United States, presidents can have two consecutive terms and then you're done. It doesn't have to be consecutive, but two terms and you're done. Even if it's one term, then you're off for a few, then you can come back. But you get 8 years. So you find out that this president gave himself a third term, and then also he disbanded the FBI. And it's like, why the fuck would you do that? No idea what that happens. So my guess would be like a power move. So they set up a couple things like that to where why this country could become divided. And that's, yeah, it's because the president, obviously that's where most of the division comes from in the country. Now the president is, you know, just not just the one that's in office now, but like how it's been pretty much forever in the United States. That's where the politics stands. But anyway, kind of going off course here. So this movie though, like I talked about the acting and everything, you do get a little bit of some of the choices that the characters make are kind of like, come on. And you understand they're reacting in these situations, like these horrible situations. Like there are terrifying situations in this movie. And if you watch the trailer, you'll see a scene with Jesse Plemons, who is the, if you've seen the trailer, he's the military guy that's got the red shades on. And he's like, oh yeah, what kind of American are you? That is arguably the best scene in the movie. That's, I'm not spoiling, I'm not going to tell you what happens in that scene, but like if you've seen the trailer, you know what scene I'm talking about. He is so good. He is actually Kirsten Dunst's husband. He was, they met in Fargo season two, I think Fargo season two or three, whichever season they were on, they were fantastic together. But he is, Kirsten Dunst, she does such a great job as just kind of like, she's been doing this forever. She's just a journalist. And another thing that they don't do is these journalists, they don't have sides. They don't pick sides. They don't care. They're just there to take pictures and get stories. So there's a lot of, it's kind of hard when there's no one for you to root for, because you don't know. It's like, man, I don't want to root against Nick Offerman, but it's like, it sounds like what he did was pretty shitty. But then you're like, all right, well, did something else happen first though that led to him maybe just being like, you know what, this country's not in a state that it can vote again, so I'm just going to take over, and then that made things worse, you know? So it can be confusing. And I would say that if I had a big gripe with the movie, that would be what it is, that it's just like maybe the director was being a little lazy with this, where it's just like, well, I'm gonna let you decide. And it's like, but for me at least, I like having someone to root for, you know, like when I know who, but at the same time, I'm not trying to make it sound like it's like, well, I can't make decisions on my own. I can't decide if I like this movie or not. That's not what I'm saying, because I did like this movie. I watched it twice, actually. And One of the things I wrote down was because of, again, this possibly being misleading, is one of the comments I saw, and it was one of those ones during the trailer where they like slam it on the TV, like boom, like this is Francis Ford Coppola's best movie since da da da. But this one was like best combat ever on screen. And I think that was another, like, a lot of people that saw was like, whoa, like, there's not enough combat in this movie for it to be the best combat on screen. Because the last, and again, not a spoiler, but, like, you know, that's just, like, the climax of the movie at the end. There's the big attack on Washington. And that's awesome. It looks great. It's a great end 20 minutes, 15, 20 minutes. So, yeah, them being, like, the best combat ever put on film. That's overselling it, I would say. But I think this is a really good movie. As far as recommending it, I don't know. I don't think you need to watch this movie because, like I said, if you're intrigued by this and you're kind of like, whoa, I mean, this is like a dystopian future, because they don't even tell you when this is. I mean, like, but it seems like it's not too far from now. I mean, like, this could maybe be like 4 or 5 years in the future. So it's a little scary in that sense. But the fact, like, if you're going to come into this, like, oh man, I hope that this is this leans left, or man, I hope this leans right, you're not going to really get that. You're going to get like characters that you could be like, okay, I think they're implying that this character leans this way or leans this way, but there's never anything they're really saying that. And one thing that the director did too, because like I said, he's the writer, that really kind of throws a wrench in trying to figure out, again, left versus right, is that California and Texas have formed an alliance. So that's just like, what the fuck? Okay. And that's also another thing that when you watch this movie, it's just like, I don't know if I can take this seriously just because of that, because it's so crazy, like, that those two would be like on the same side. So Civil War, new movie by A24, I would give it a 7.5. I again this movie was definitely different than what I was expecting. I was expecting a lot of action, a lot of war, but I will say the slower scenes in this movie, most of them are very tense, like in just like white knuckle. But yeah, so I guess it's hard for me to like talk positively, but be like, no, you don't need to watch it though. So I guess I'd recommend it. All right, we're just gonna hear a quick promo and then we'll talk some Parks and Rec.
I'm Imran.
And I'm Sophia.
I'm the brother.
And I'm the sister. And we are watching a show about cousins.
We're your hosts for Dance of Joy, a Perfect Strangers rewatch podcast.
We grew up watching the 80s hit sitcom, and now we'd like you to join us every week as we rediscover our love for our favorite TV cousins, Balky and Larry.
You can find our show at danceofjoypod.com and on all major podcast platforms. Now we are so happy, Sophia. We do the Dance of Joy.
Imran, this is a podcast. They can't see us.
Oh, popo.
All right, welcome back. Season 4, Episode 16, Sweet 16, directed by Michael Schur, written by Norm Hiscock. For the cold open, things are getting a little annoying for Leslie's campaign team around the office because she refuses to do anything related to the election inside City Hall walls. She tells us that yeah, there's certain rules, and I feel like this is one of those things that no one's really going to say anything. It's more just like, you shouldn't be dealing, you know, you shouldn't be doing your political stuff inside City Hall. That, yes, if she was doing it in front of certain people, it would be like, yeah, that's illegal, you can't do that. But, like, with her team, it's like, no one's going to say anything, but she's like, no. So if anyone has just, like, one question about the campaign, she's like, we have to go outside and it'll just be like a yes or no answer, like something like annoying like that. So she's definitely being ethical here. However, simple things like a yes or no answer turn into a big production of having to leave the building. Finally, April locks Leslie out of the building out of pure frustration. Yeah, it's just a funny scene. She's like telling April, no, we'll think of it as a fun game. Like, look, campaign stuff on my outside, park stuff on my inside, campaign stuff on my outside. And April's like, oh, here's a fun game, and just like locks her and Ben outside. So pretty funny. Typical April. All right, so we start off in Ron's office where he reiterates with Leslie that she needs to take a leave of absence because of the election, obviously. Of course, this is nonsense to her. We find out that Leslie is working about 100 hours a week between her job and then also the campaign. She also works for, this is great, this is one of my favorite, I guess, play on words or puns with Parks and Rec, because there are so many. She says that she also volunteers for Wheels, for Meals on Wheels. And when Ron's face is great, just kind of like, huh? She just goes, oh, well, we repair the vans for Meals on Wheels. It's just, it's so good. But Ron is quick to point out that Leslie's been falling behind some of her duties. She's even been wearing the same red sweater for 4 days. And when she's like, no, how do you know I don't have, because she's like, she knows that everything Ron's saying is true, but she's just kind of fighting him on it because she obviously doesn't want to take any time off. And he's like, no, you've had the same lollipop stuck to your shirt since Tuesday. And she's just like, oh, Ron, it's called lollipopping. All the kids are doing it. It's pretty funny. All right, so she leaves Ron's office saying that she will not take a sabbatical. Over to Anne's office, Tom surprises her with a gift. It's a Kangol hat that says Tommy's girl. Of course, Anne's just says, hers says Tommy's girl, and then his hat, just like his matching one, just says Tommy. So she's just like, hell no, and she throws it back at him. And the thing is, like, she asks a good question. It's like, wait, why does mine have to say Tommy's girl? Why can't yours say Anne's man? And Tom, it's just pretty funny, though. Actually, Tom's just like, sorry, honey, nobody owns me, or whatever it is. I mean, it's just like, so like, you know, what he's doing to her. But then when she brings it back up, it's just like, no, it doesn't work that way. So then Tom, you know, because Anne doesn't want the hat, he goes over to April to complain that he and Anne have nothing in common. But of course, April doesn't really care, and she's no help. She does mention, though, that both Anne and Tom keep coming to her for advice, which, I don't know, it's just so stupid to me. Like, you do see it later on in the episode, but, like, why would Anne be wasting her time trying to, like, better this relationship with Tom by going to April for advice? It just seems like, I don't know, like, the way they play it more is that Anne's just in this for whatever dumb reason, and Tom is the desperate one. Like, Tom's the one who's reaching here. And it just seems kind of stupid to me that it's like, yeah, I don't know, but again, this whole thing sucks. But anyway, now we're in Chris's office where he's been dog-sitting Champion. So Andy's here to pick him up. April and Andy were away for the night. This is another funny thing for me about Parks and Rec that I talk about a lot. Why were April and Andy away for the night on a work night? Like, so, because they're at work the next day, so why did they take this leave? You know, like, I don't know if they went out for a romantic night or something. Why would you do this on a weeknight? You have work the next morning, but whatever. In the one night that Chris had Champion, he brought him to a dog training class. However, everything was in German for whatever reason. I don't know why Chris brought him there. So Chris can actually teach, or he can kind of like talk to Champion in German, which is kind of impressive, I guess. He also says he took him to PetSmart and he got him groomed and updated on all his shots. So that's Champion being groomed, not Chris. Chris then points out to Andy that Champion needs consistent exercise, and he kind of tells Andy that dogs tend to take on the attitude of their owners, which is why Lucy is in the opposite corner of the room I'm in, and she's doing her podcast right now because she sees me doing it, and we're going to work on getting that produced. So anyway, over to the Parks Department, Jerry comes in and immediately starts getting made fun of by Tom because of his new shirt. So I'm going to defend Jerry and say, fuck you, Tom. Like, you look like an idiot with that stupid Kangol hat on. But Jerry's shirt is a little bit ridiculous. It's like, it almost looks like satin. Not satin, like silky. But it has like train stops and like train routes all over it. Which is funny because it's like, I don't know, like if you lived in New York or something, I could see you wanting to have that. But like in Pawnee, Indiana, it's, I don't know. Like I live in Illinois. I'm kind of close to Chicago. So it's like, it maybe be relevant to me, but it's just funny that Jerry would think like a shirt like this was like, yeah, like why would Gal get him? It doesn't matter. But anyway, so me saying F you to Tom and your Kangol hat, I've always hated Kangol hats. It's nothing just against Tom. I've always thought they were stupid looking. But then we find out that the shirt was a birthday present from Gal. Even Leslie forgot, and she genuinely feels terrible.
Oh my God, Jerry. I can't believe I forgot your birthday.
Leslie, it is okay. I mean, let's face it, it's a tough one to remember.
My birthday is February 29th. So I only get one real birthday, you know, once every 4 years. But it's great because my wife, Gail, makes such a big deal out of it. We go, we split a huge piece of cotton candy cheesecake from KKJ's Cheesecake Facility. And then, while we hold hands for a while, we listen to some Anita Baker. She meets up with some friends and I turn in early.
I mean, like, come on, is that not pure brilliance? Like, the man with the worst luck in history is born on Leap Year Day. And of course, like, another, just besides them doing that to Jerry, more like, and I mean, like, this isn't brilliance because this just takes planning, but maybe a little bit patience. If you hadn't put two and two together, or if you weren't really paying attention to the title of this episode, it's called Sweet 16. This is season 4, episode 16. 4 times 16 is 64. That's how old Jerry is in this episode. So it's pretty awesome there. However, I have to point out that Jim O'Hare is not that old. 10 years ago, he wasn't 64 years old. He was 50 years old. So they obviously aged him up for that. But I just... it's incredible. Those two things right there. One, how they timed, yes, the episode title and like the release date and all that good stuff, with also just him, the small fact that Jerry is born on Leap Year. It is brilliant. I love it. All right. I do love that Leslie genuinely feels bad though, and that she isn't just acting, even though it's Jerry. But then she sends him off to do some fecal contamination testing at the local reservoir. This is, of course, her way of getting Jerry out of the office. She gathers the department, announces that they will be throwing him a Sweet 16 party. Here we find out that Donna's family has a lake house, one that she's not too happy about everyone being aware of. Kind of like Ron and his log cabins. This is really funny acting by Retta when Leslie announced, she's just like, Donna, what about your log cabin? And the way she reacts is genuinely like, fuck, like, why do you know about this? So it does remind me a lot of Ron and his log cabins, but it's just, it doesn't shock me that Leslie knows about this, and it probably doesn't shock Donna either, but it's just, it's great acting. I feel like her just being genuinely like, man, like, I wish you wouldn't have told anyone that. And then Donna also tells us, this is where we find out that her whole family, she calls them a cold people, and they're not very big on hospitality. So then we jump over to the lake house, and it is beautiful. There's a great detail, like right when it shows like this shot. I mean, it's incredible. Like this is a beautiful shot with the lake right in front of it, but Ron is already in a canoe. And it's like, they don't focus on him. They show you this huge sprawling shot of how beautiful this looks. And you just see, if you're not paying attention, you'll just think that it's like a canoe going by, but it's like, oh, that's Ron in the canoe. It's awesome that he's already out there. So inside, Donna hands everyone binded rule books for the lake house. Just then, Tom notices a platinum record on the wall for R&B singer Ginuwine. This is when we find out that Ginuwine and Donna are cousins, but then things take a turn for the worse when Ann says, who's Ginuwine? Which doesn't sit well with Tom. So... yeah, Ginuwine, we do see him in two or three episodes moving forward. I think it's three episodes, actually. Yeah, he is, I don't need to say the episodes, but I'm pretty sure it's three. But I love that detail there because he does come back, and it's awesome that they can use... but you know what? I should say he's in four episodes because his pictures are in this one. But yeah, no, it's an awesome callback when you do get to actually see Ginuwine perform at the end of season six. It's awesome. All right, so then Chris shows Andy some of the new commands that Champion learned, and Andy seems a bit jealous, saying, well, you know what, anyone can do that, and then, of course, trying it and failing, like, he's just like, dun, 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 like, just yelling out stupid German things. It kind of reminds me in season 3 when Ben was trying to speak, what is it, Wakote, with Ben Hotate. And or Wamapoke, I can't remember like what it's. I know it's the Wamapoke tribe. I think they're the language is called something else. But Ben's trying to speak to him, and it just makes no sense. So it kind of reminded me of that. Back over to the lake house, Leslie does a phone interview while decorating for the party, really showing Ron that she's good and she doesn't need any time off. One problem though, no one invited Jerry. Leslie blames herself. Then her and Ron take off to get the birthday boy. On the way over, the two talk more about the sabbatical. Leslie just saying, like, nope, I'm not doing it. And Ron saying, you kind of have to do it. But, you know, Over to Tom and Anne, he starts asking her questions just to see how much they have in common. He then goes and complains to April, who doesn't seem to care much. Also, she's been drinking. Yeah. So April, as she often does, turns to the bottle. She did this in the Boys Club episode. Well, when Leslie got in a lot of trouble, and that was just because April was drinking wine from the basket, or the free basket. Now Leslie and Ron get to Jerry's house, which is, I don't know why, I just find it's funny that it's house number 420. And I do feel like, even though he's not the writer for the episode, I feel like that's a Harris Whittles joke. Rest in peace, Harris Whittle. However, in the Parks and Recollection, they did talk about, seemed like maybe he liked to partake in the weed, the 420 activities. And he also came up with the name Keith Slertner, which was the name for Paul Scheer's character in the episode Kaboom. And apparently when Michael Scheer found out that Keith is kind of a nickname for weed, he wasn't too happy about that, but they kept it in because it was too late by the time he found out. So I thought that was great. All right, so Ron has a great line, though, when Leslie, who's knocking on the door, asks, where could he be? And Ron replies with, maybe someone else is throwing him a surprise party and actually invited him. Ron is such a great smartass in this episode because, like, he's right. Leslie is fucking things up. She's forgetting things, important things, because her brain is so scrambled and she needs to take some time off. So Ron's not being, like, overly aggressive or anything with it. He's not being an asshole. He's just being very sarcastic and kind of snotty. It's pretty great. Where are we at? The front door, however, is unlocked, so they let themselves in. When they find Jerry, he's in the tub with a glass of wine, a candle, a scrub brush, and a book. This actually looks amazing. Not the sight of Jerry in the tub, just the ambiance. Also, big bath guy, me. If you didn't know this about me, I love taking baths. Leslie tells him there's a big emergency and he has to get out, and he goes with them. On the way back, Leslie notices a problem with her campaign signs all over town. So we don't get to see them, but all of a sudden she just pulls over and she's like, oh, I think she says crap on a stick, which is pretty good writing if that is what she says, because her campaign signs are really on a stick. Pretty awesome. She might not say that, though. back to the lake house, Anne talks with a semi-intoxicated April, who alludes to the fact that Tom might break up with her later. This, of course, annoys Anne, and she storms off to break up with him first. Isn't this whole Anne and Tom storyline, like, so stupid? Like, this is me just genuinely asking you guys. Like, it's so childish and just, like, dumb, and it's like, why did they do this? It's just, I don't know. I guess in this episode, it doesn't piss me off as much. Actually, there's something that annoys the hell out of me that's coming up, though, so. All right, quickly back to Andy and Chris. They disagree over whether or not Champion needs a leash. And this is just the two of them walking. And it's really weird because it almost seems like Chris and Andy aren't with the group at the lake house, but they are. They're just never really, like, it does show them inside a couple times, but they don't really have anything to do with the story that's going on inside the lake house, which is like Jerry's birthday. They're more so just doing their own Champion B story off to the side. But yeah, so like I said, Andy's like, no, Champion's going to be fine. He's my dog. And Chris is like, well, I wouldn't let him off the leash. Andy lets him off the leash, and Champion just fucking takes off. So now we go over to the store, Scientologist, which is where Leslie gets her signs made, obviously. I think this is the first time that we actually have been here. Like, we've obviously seen other signs and stuff that Leslie has had made, but we do see this store a few more times moving forward, and of course the pun Scientologist, play on Scientologist, is wonderful. We will see this again a couple more times down the road, like I said. The problem with Leslie's signs, though, like I said before, when she pulled over, is that the person working at the store who made the signs didn't click on the JPEG link. They literally wrote out the entire link on the sign.
So, as you can imagine, we would never have ordered a sign with all this complicated nonsense because, we're not insane.
See right here on the order form? It says http://www.nope2012.com/images/cmy. /campaign/QTY10013/09239U/09230099TWPoster.jpeg.
JPEG. Yes, Walter, it does say that. You're right. But using basic logic and human intelligence, one can surmise that this is a link to an image. This isn't what we wanted printed on the signs.
Whatever's on the order form, I print. In this case, it was a long string of letters and numbers.
Can I just show you something here? There you go.
It's highly against protocol.
Well, here, look.
And that's a good sign. Should have used that.
This is just, I love the amazing nod to the stupidity of us, the citizens of Pawnee, all of us, all you listeners, all me too, all of us. We are citizens of Pawnee. We are idiots. And I love that they, like, this guy, you know what I have to say too? I love that Leslie's just like, yes, Walter. Like, I don't think the guy's wearing a name tag. Maybe he is, but I just love that she's been there so many times. She knows him by name. And the fact that she's talking shit to a guy that she has called by name before makes it so much funnier that this isn't just some random stranger. Like, she's probably dealt with this idiot before. But also the acting there is just fantastic by that guy. And not even just acting, but I mean, like, how he reads that so smoothly. I wonder how many takes that took just to read it off perfectly like that. Because when you're reading a website like that, a web address, a URL, it's tough it's like reading a license plate sometimes that's like a vanity one when two words are put together and you're like, all right, all the vowels were taken out and this could be so many different words, but you're trying to, like, I love doing that, trying to figure out what a license plate means. And then, like, when you can, like, sometimes see bumper stickers or whatever, it's like, oh, that's a hockey team. So it means, it says hockey, not hickey or hooky, you know? So I don't know. I thought it was pretty funny. How this guy just does it so seamlessly, how he knows where there's separate letters and then where the next words start. It's just awesome. And then Leslie talking over him or trying to stop him is great. And her just kind of realizing he's not going to stop because he's being kind of a smartass. So now we quickly cut over to Ann and Tom, who are in a fight over who's going to break up with who first. They fight over stupid nonsense. And all I can think about is how unconvincing April is as a drunk person. I don't know. I just don't care about Tom and Ann. Like, it's so stupid what they're doing. But I'm just watching Aubrey Plaza. And I'm sorry, I love you, but I don't think you play a very convincing drunk. Like, Rashida, I think on this show, plays the best one. Adam Scott plays a really good one too. But anyway, back at the lake house, many hours later, the surprise is wasted since no one is there except Ben, who's asleep. So this is when they get back with Jerry. It is obviously dark out and it's much later. Leslie kicks in, surprise! And then Ben just kind of, he's the only one, he shoots up from the couch. He's like, surprise. Obviously, he's been sleeping for some time. His hair is like super messed up too. So then he's telling Leslie it just got so late that everyone is either asleep or they're out looking for Champion because, again, when Andy let him off the leash, Champion took off. Speaking of, we see Andy and Chris out with flashlights and headlamps calling for him. Andy confesses to Chris that he's not a good dog owner. He even says that he ate one of Champion's bones and he liked it. So it's funny, but it's also just like, dude, that's gross. Like, it's to the point where you almost like lose a little more respect for Andy Dwyer. Just goes like, come on, man. Like, first of all, you don't need to tell him that you ate one of the dog treats on accident. Or I don't even know if he says on accident. I just think he says he was hungry and it looked good, so he ate it and he really did enjoy it. But he says that Chris should become Champion's new owner. And then Chris, he's like, no, you know what? Like, you and April are the ones who rescued him. He loves you guys. He tells Andy, maybe if you sing, that'll get him to come back. So Andy starts singing. And sure enough, that works. Champion comes running over. And Andy is doing all his, oh my God, he loves my voice. It's so good. And they cut over to Chris. And he shows us that he had a dog whistle the whole time. So he started playing that as Andy was singing. And seems to me like he could have gotten Champion back way sooner with this dog whistle. But maybe it would. Like hours, it seems like, but I guess it worked out well because Andy got the confidence back for Champion. So later on, we see that Tom and Ann are back together. They wake up April, and that's whatever. I don't care. The group finally has their party for Jerry. Tom talks and I hate it. Anne talks and I hate it too, because like the Tom just, he's like, oh, happy birthday, Jerry. But then starts talking about him and Anne, and it's just stupid. And then Anne kind of jumps in and she's like, oh, I don't care about any of it. The rest of the group sits in silence as they all hope that someone will say something nice about Jerry. Ron calls Jerry adequate. And then Chris has some nice words as they're talking. Leslie falls asleep on Jerry, who's told not to move or to wake up Leslie, which is awesome because, yeah, when Ron's like, Jerry, you are very adequate, he like smiles. It's like, and everyone's waiting for him to say more. And he just kind of looks around the room like he's very happy with what he just said. And yeah, then when Leslie falls asleep on him, just how he's like, wait a minute, what? I have to just lay here and or sit here and let her sleep on me. And Ben's just kind of like, hey, it's fine, man. Don't worry about it. It'll just be like a couple hours. And he like puts a blanket on her. So sure enough, the next morning we see that they slept together. Technically, Leslie is still sleeping on. And by sleeping on, I just mean he's sitting on the corner of the couch and she's just like fell asleep, you know, sitting up against him. But yeah, Ron wakes Leslie up. He's like, hey, let's go take a walk. And he insists that she take a sabbatical. She still argues. Ron gives a very insightful story, though, as he always does. And he tells her that she can't half-ass two things. She needs to full-ass one. She agrees, and she says that she will cut her Parks Department work down to 10 hours a week. All right, so for the tag of the episode, nothing really exciting here. It's just the group has pooled their money, and they got Jerry and Gal a bed and breakfast in their favorite vacation spot, which is Muncie, Indiana. So I guess the funniest part here is more so just that it's like, yep, you guys love Muncie, Indiana. So, all right. So on IMDb, this episode's sitting at a 7.6. It's a fine episode. I until we get to the election or the debate, which is in a few episodes, there's some of these episodes that kind of feel like they could have just been, I guess not the content because there's two totally different stories, but in season two, I kind of when we were talking about season two, you know, a few months back, I kind of mentioned how there's a lot of episodes in here where it's just like, there's nothing really significant happening to the story. It's just like, they're funny episodes, but this is kind of one like that. There's some good jokes in here, but it's not a great episode. Not a lot of significance here. We do find out when Jerry's birthday is, so that's good. And we find out that Leslie's going to spend a little more time working on the election. But yeah, this was just kind of like a filler episode, I feel. And I don't know, like the thing with Leslie taking the sabbatical, that's probably the most impactful thing that she's going to slow down. I don't think that really affects the show, though. Like, I think by the time maybe the next episode comes out, like the sabbatical's already over. Or maybe she's not doing that. Who knows? I love that we find out that Donna's cousin is Genuine, and finding out that her family is that they're not like the nicest people. And that is going to be great because that will come back in season 7 when we see Donna's wedding. And we get to meet her family, and it's awesome because they're very petty people. It's great. Anne and Tom again, just like, it's just dumb. Like, I didn't even have really the energy to get like super worked up, which I guess is fine. You know, like, you guys don't need to hear me getting pissed about the same shit every week. But in this episode, it was more just like, oh God, like just eye rolly. Like, who cares? Who cares? Don't worry, folks. This Tom and Anne thing will be over soon, I promise. And then one of the greatest sight gags in the show, which was the JPEG link on the sign just being completely written out, because, and I just love Leslie's insult to the guy. She's like, well, you know, using basic human intelligence, one would surmise that this is a link. And then the guy, when Leslie's like, let me show you something, and she clicks on the thing, he's like, this is highly against protocol, like letting someone else touch the thing. So I thought that was fantastic. So, all right, that is going to wrap up this episode. If you'd like to contact the show, citizensofpawnee@gmail.com is how you can do that. Please like and follow on Instagram at Citizens of Pawnee Podcast and at Parks Rec Memes. Next week, I'll be covering Season 4, Episode 17, Campaign Shakeup. Thank you for listening to Citizens of Pawnee, a Parks and Recreation podcast. My name's Brian, and I'll see you next Tuesday. Chris uses Bumble Flex.